So why are some people more vulnerable to COVID-19 than others? We're going to look at that question this week, starting today with cancer patients, about 650,000 of whom will have chemotherapy this year. So why do doctors feel that their chance of getting COVID-19 is as dangerous as the cancer itself? And how can they be made safer? And when are you safe around them? Well, listen up, because we have some important information now from oncologist Siddhartha Mukherjee of Columbia University Medical Center. He's also the Pulitzer Prize-winning author of The Emperor of Maladies, a biography of cancer. So, Dr. Mukherjee, start with, you know, we know chemotherapy targets duplicating cancer cells, but you say it also targets good cells, you know, the ones that boost your immunity. It suppresses them.
Well, most cancer treatments will kill rapidly dividing cells, and your immune cells are among the most rapidly dividing. So you get immunosuppression as a consequence of chemotherapy. Not of all chemotherapies. There are certainly drugs that don't cause immunosuppression, but there are drugs that do cause immunosuppression, and those patients are particularly vulnerable to getting infected and potentially having more severe complications of their infections.
Right. So these white blood cells that we love because they are the body's best defense against viruses, they're suppressed. So normally people having these treatments are skittish about being around others. They don't want to catch anything. And now possibly they can get COVID-19. How are you handling cancer patients?
Well, we're trying our best to keep the guidelines and protocols and not delay treatment. Obviously, if we find that a patient has a concomitant infection of any kind, including possibly with COVID-19, we have to delay the treatment. There's, you know, whether it's COVID-19 or whether it's a bacterial pneumonia, giving more chemotherapy in the context of an infection is usually not recommended except for unusual circumstances. We have advised as many people as possible that these patients are particularly susceptible and they should take extra care, including self-isolation, social distancing, and a lot of hand hygiene. The cornerstone of all of this is testing other patients, not chemotherapy patients, but testing the broad public to figure out who's infected and who's not infected. That is the cornerstone of being able to give safe chemotherapy to patients who are immunocompromised. Then the person who's infected knows that they should be in self-quarantine or in real quarantine, and the patients who are susceptible know as well. I think that if there's one thing that we need to do for cancer patients, if you have anyone in your family that is a cancer patient, try to isolate them, and for you yourself, stay at home and practice what the CDC and other agencies have been trying to tell you. Removing yourself away from a potentially infected pool is the best favor that you can do to a loved one who may be immunocompromised.
A couple things. You know, are there alternatives? Can you switch from the chemotherapy to, let's say, radiation? Is there anything else?
There are very few alternatives. I mean, in the sense that, you know, these are protocols that were devised based on very strong evidence. The number of doses, when the doses are given, and so forth. So there are certain aspects, and I would say rare aspects, of the delivery of cancer drugs where there can be changes made. Again, there are guidelines about how to make those changes. Number two, there's certain things in cancer which are not of immediate necessity. It's, again, rare. They're elective things that are done. We are delaying any and all of those. Just to give you a sense of the story and how complicated it is, there was a patient in one of our wards receiving chemotherapy for pancreatic cancer, sharing the ward with other patients. He was examined every day and nothing seemed, didn't have a fever, had nothing going on with him. One day, a surgical group came by and he coughed maybe a couple of times. And the surgeon said, gosh, you know, why don't we just test him just in case? This was 2 weeks ago before we knew so much about asymptomatic patients. And this patient was positive and was totally asymptomatic for the COVID-19 illness. So the patient was instantly isolated and removed from that room, etc. So without testing, we cannot easily tell whether you are at risk of transmitting the infection to your loved one. I mean, obviously, if you have symptoms, that's very clear. But if you don't have symptoms, you still may be shedding virus. We know this over and over again now from multiple studies.
Well, first, that poor man who, you know, inadvertently became kind of a Trojan horse, bringing the virus into that ward. You feel terrible for him. And we know that you're doing things like requesting that non-urgent patients use telemedicine. Some hospitals are having non-cancer patients use different elevators in different buildings where possible, so they don't even cross tracks with the cancer patients that need this treatment. You've said that we have to test more and more people so we know who's positive, who's not. Until then, you know, we have to assume we all are positive. But I'm wondering, as you say that, you know, identify the people who are positive so people with cancer who are getting treatments can steer clear of them. What about the reverse of that? Should we also identify these, you know, these people struggling with cancer? Maybe they should have something on that says, I am getting cancer treatment. Please steer clear of me.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, there are complicated privacy issues involved. Cancer carries enough stigma in and of itself. Adding to that stigma, I think, will just really be a distasteful way to think about it.
Yeah. Some people are delaying treatment, but we don't know how long this pandemic will go on. And we are hearing from Dr. Fauci that it could come back next year. This could be lengthy.
We generally are recommending people not to delay treatment for cancer. There are windows beyond which delay of treatment actually can cause a problem. So we're generally trying to keep on track. In times of limited resources, we may not be able to keep on track. And that's why it's extraordinarily essential. I mean, people talk about, you know, the pandemic and the number of deaths that it's going to cause from COVID-19 infection. But there's also numbers of deaths that are going to be caused because of COVID-19 infection doesn't allow a patient with cancer to get an ICU bed when they need an ICU bed for some complication of cancer, not from COVID-19. Mm-hmm. So we're probably going to undercount the excess deaths caused by this epidemic because we're counting the deaths that are caused by COVID-19. We're not counting the deaths that are caused by the glumming up of hospital beds and ICU beds for people who really, really need treatment for other diseases such as cancer or heart disease. We recognize that virtually every single person listening to this probably has someone in their family, in their loved ones, in their friends who has cancer. Do them a favor, stay at home, and as has become a viral meme, flatten the curve, if not for yourself, then for your loved one who has cancer. There are two things that are really required. Number one, understanding who is actively shedding virus. So in other words, more testing. And also number two, what we haven't talked a lot about is that there are antibody tests which should be deployed and can be deployed quite easily, which tell you when you are post-immune from the virus, in which case you're safe.
In other words, you've had it, you fought it off, your body built up an immunity. In fact, there are trials now to maybe use those antibodies to, you know, fight the virus, but it indicates that you fought it up already, you have immunity to it.
That's correct. So it indicates that you've had immunity to it and you're not actively shedding the virus. If those two criteria are met, then you are actually safe. If we could get these two pieces together, and these are not complicated things to do, and give healthcare workers access to these tests, again, we would save a lot of lives and a lot of money because those people, let's say you're a chemo nurse, and you know that you've been exposed, you're no longer shedding virus, you've acquired memory immunity, then you are a perfect candidate to return back to work and to be able to give safely chemotherapy to a patient who may be immunocompromised because you are not actively contagious. But we now need to start measuring within people. Make tests widely available outside dangerous areas like hospitals where you don't want potentially COVID-infected patients to come in and test. But, you know, drive-through testing, tent-based testing, testing in places where you can be safe and you can keep others safe as well.
And you get a general sense of the whole community, not just people in a hospital.
Exactly. We aren't going to solve the economic problems without solving the medical problems first. Most of these techniques are decades old. They just need to be deployed properly so that we can get maybe 50, 60% of the population back to work.
That is oncologist Siddhartha Mukherjee from Columbia University's Irving Cancer Center. He's also the Pulitzer Prize-winning author of The Emperor of Maladies, A Biography of Cancer. Doctor, thank you so much. I'm assuming the bottom line is that you want patients to talk to their care team and make their own decisions, but with all of this in mind.
That is correct.
Doctor, thanks so much. Best of luck to you.
Best of luck to you. Thank you so much.